Welcome to part two of Why Not You with Derek Seymour. Keep those pens and pads out, take notes, and enjoy the conversation.
Started with your mom and your counselor. It goes back.
That thread, man, it's a very well-defined thread for me when I look back. I'm 53 years old right now. I can go back to 17 and see the thread that's led me to sitting in this chair talking to you.
Wow.
It's a very clear thread. I'm very clear on it. It ain't all pretty. It ain't all fixed and perfect. Mm-hmm. I'm still working on stuff just like everybody else.
Right.
But I can look back and see, oh yeah, there's some good behind me.
Mm-hmm.
What's next?
And it's amazing just when you shared your background as far as like high school, because I struggled also. When I made that transition from going to a high school that was predominantly Hispanic, Black and Hispanic, to a high school that was predominantly white.
That's a whole nother,
And I struggled a little bit. And I was, when it came graduation, my main thing was just being able to graduate, right? That was the focus.
Get across finish line.
This is
something that I wish society did a better job of explaining to children.
Mm-hmm.
That those primary and secondary years in school is not the end. It's just a beginning. It's a starter's pistol. Mm-hmm. And I explain it like this. I always ask, I'll ask you, mm-hmm. same thing I ask kids over and over again. What's the first thing you build when you build a house? I'm asking, what's the first thing you build?
It's the foundation. Getting the footings in. Yep.
That ugly piece of concrete. You got to lay that slab.
Right.
It don't matter how nice the walls are, the paint, your flat screens. None of that matters if you don't have that good foundation. And it's the ugliest part of the house. You're going to cover it up the first chance. You're going to put carpet, wood, tile on.
No, right.
Right first, because it's hideous.
Uh-huh.
But it's the most important part of the house. And what I tell kids is this. You need to understand, we're not giving you everything at school.
Mm-hmm.
All we're giving you is a concrete slab. If you choose to just sleep on the slab the rest of your life or break it up with a sledgehammer, that's on you. But if you want walls, if you want a refrigerator, if you want anything else on this slab, that's what you're going to spend the rest of your life building.
Yeah.
But the public school system is going to give you a foundation, but you got to understand it's only the foundation. It's the ugly, non-sexy part.
Right.
The rest you got to go get, because the purpose of school is not to teach you everything you need to know. Wow. The purpose of school is to teach you how to learn. When you turn 18, if you decide never to read a book again, are the cops coming for you? Nope, because it's not, ignorance is not a crime.
Yeah,
should be, but it's not. Ignorance is not a crime.
Yeah.
So if you choose not to learn anymore, that's all on you. But it won't be because we didn't teach you how to read.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's the mindset I'm putting in kids. The curriculum, that's the easy part.
Yeah.
Creating that mindset of a learner and what the place is of learning in your life, because you need to be a lifelong learner.
Mm-hmm.
Man, if we do that for kids, they will become, I've seen it. I'm not, this ain't even hypothetical. I got tangible proof. I got evidence. I've seen the transformation in a child when you give them that. And once they got it, they go. Man, I got kids reading, what's the book? Atomic Habits. I play Dr. Eric Thomas in my class. Like, I'm trying to give them everything I can. I'm coming with a full bag of tricks, man.
Yeah.
And the kids are responding to it. And I've seen it happen year after year after year. So I don't buy this. Or the kids just don't. And they can't. And they're late. I don't buy that. Because they're not getting the right stimulus. You're not giving them what they need to actually grow.
Yeah.
You're giving them artificial substitutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know you didn't give me no artificial substitutes when we spoke. Hey, hi. Everybody, that's how Why Not You came. Why not you?
You're right. That's the question.
Yep.
That's the question I asked you. Man, I'm going to give you your flowers. We had a conversation, just a one-on-one, and somewhere I asked you that question, why not you? And every time I see your logo, man, your logo is tangible evidence that I'm doing what God's called me to do.
Absolutely.
You're wearing a logo that comes from a conversation you and I had.
Yeah.
I know I'm doing what I'm supposed to do.
Absolutely.
Period. I have zero doubts.
Speaking life.
Yep.
Yep. So how has serving others though actually helped you or taught you about yourself?
I think it's helped me mainly because by not putting the focus on me all the time, I don't get caught up in a lot of the things that some other people might get caught up in. I'm not really as caught up about people's opinions.
Yeah.
I'm not as caught up in chasing behind, oh, they got this car, they got this house, so I need to, you know, I'm not comparing myself to anybody. The only person I got to compare myself to is me.
Mm-hmm.
My number one competition is me.
Is you.
You know, somebody asked me recently a question. They was like, who's the most important person in your life? There's a lot of things. You know, you can say God, you can say your wife, your kid. Yeah. There's a lot of people you could say. But just speaking for right now in this moment or in that moment, what really came to me and said, the most important person in my life right now is me. And that sounds conceited to say that on any level. But really, the most important person to my life right now is me, because it's the decisions I make, right? My choices are driving everything, right? My relationship with God is tied to the choices I make. It's not the choices he making.
Right.
Like, if my relationship with God falters, it won't be on his side of the equation. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's my decisions about what I'm doing in terms of worship, quiet time, study, right? My relationship with my wife, my relationship with my kids, my professional pursuits. It really is on me. And I understand that more than I ever have. And a mutual friend of ours, Coach T, said to me one time, man, you just got to get out of your own way. He looked me in my eyeballs face to face. He said, you just got to get out of your own way. Like, it's there. You're the limiting factor. And man, once I really got a hold of that notion that, you know, I am the common denominator in all my problems. The one thing that all my problems have in common is me. I can't talk about what my wife did or what the government did and the man and whatever other boogeyman you want to come up with. At the end of the day, I'm with me 24/7.
Yeah.
I'm responsible. And I just got to own that. Yeah. Good, bad, or indifferent. That's the perspective I've really leaned into in the last year or so.
And you know, I'm looking over your shoulder, and I see you owe you. It's all about investing in yourself, you know,
yes,
and making yourself better so you could grow other people.
And so
it kind of goes to what we were, chatting about earlier, as far as like the DISC assessment. That's another means of just another resource, right, to actually help you identify your strengths and weaknesses and who you really are.
I highly recommend anybody's never taken that DISC profile. I recommend it. So the reflection piece and really our conversations here in the last couple of days have really made me realize this. So I'm a 99i, which is, you know, I'm the flight attendant cheerleader, making sure everybody's good guy, right? that's my profile. And when I now look back over my life and how I've lived it, and my championing of people and my encouragement of people, that makes sense. I was an I before I knew I was an I. That's my profile. And I've been that since I was a kid.
Wow.
The problem is I'm only now finding that out as an adult in my 50s. And so I didn't have that tool to help me shape and understand what was going on.
Yeah.
In the military, being a high I isn't necessarily something to celebrate it. I clearly remember when I resigned my commission to get out of the Navy, that when I looked at that fitness report, which is our, you know, evaluation, and thinking all the things that I thought were best about myself weren't covered in any of the categories that were on this report.
Wow.
So I recognize I'm not the person they're looking for. And I had to decide, was I going to try to be the person? I watched guys burn themselves out trying to be that person.
Yeah.
And I'm not knocking them. Lord knows I'm not knocking the Navy. I just had to make a personal decision for me. So my leaving the military was really because I recognized it's not that I didn't have the right ingredients. They just weren't planted in the right soil. Right? You can be good seed, but planted in bad soil, And so you're not going to grow the way you should grow. And it takes a lot to uproot yourself and plant yourself somewhere else when you put time and effort in the building. And there are people who will stay in a position that they have outgrown, that is no longer serving them, that's no longer feeding them, but just because I got time in, I'm going to stay.
Yeah.
Instead of being courage, have enough courage to shift and pivot. And man, that lack of the ability to pivot kills people. Right. You know, what's all saying? You climbing that ladder of success, right?
Mm-hmm.
The problem is a lot of people climb that ladder and realize they get to the top and it's been leaning against the wrong wall.
Right.
Whew. And what's worse, when they tell themselves, well, now that I'm up here, I might as well stay. No, climb your butt down and move the ladder.
Climb down.
And people don't have people's lack of ability to climb back down that ladder just because they put an effort to get up there and move that ladder to a different wall. Man, a lot of dreams end up in the cemetery because of that.
That's a shame, too. That is a shame.
Be willing to make. I signed the paperwork. I'm done. Right? And my mom. And this is what you want to. Okay, let me bring it all the way back around. Then when I went to get out, mom, you're getting out. But
what you in the first place. But,
right. So on one end, you didn't want me to go in. And now on this end, you didn't want me to get out. Do you miss it? Even now today, I've been out for over 20 years. Do you miss it? No. But it's funny because, again, I love my parents. I love my parents. But they know what they know.
Right.
And they come from where they come from. And they are who they are. And I've just learned that, I don't get in my feelings about that one way or another. Mm-hmm. They are who they are. So their advice and their point of view is being shaped by where they came from. My grandfather couldn't read. Wow. And so when I look at my father, who was raised by a father who couldn't read, what were my expectations? You got to have realistic expectation what people can even give to you, what they can provide. I didn't have that as a child, but as an adult, I get it.
Yeah.
Right? I get it. And my dad has done phenomenal for himself.
Right.
He's on a high school education. He's done some incredible things, but that also came from an era where you could go a long way just off the strength of your back.
Yeah.
We don't live in a strength of your back society anymore.
Right.
That's not who people are looking to now. Now they're looking at people's strength of what are your mind. Mm-hmm. It's the information age and data and coding, and it's a different era now. So I can't even look at my 14-year-old and encourage him to be the kind of man that my dad was professionally, because things have shifted.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just recognize, just having that perspective, man. It's just perspective and knowing where you are in any given moment on that continuum of the shift. And I can look back. Okay, my grandfather was here. My dad was here. Now I'm here. Yeah. Now where's my son going?
Mm-hmm.
And it's an evolution. It's an evolution. I can't even expect my son to have the life I had.
You can't.
You know?
It's not fair.
I tell the story when he was about two, him walking up to the TV and touching it and looking back at me and say, Daddy, you're broken. You know why? Because in this world, all glass should move when you touch it. He grew up on iPads. He grew up with smartphones have always existed in his life.
Right.
Touchable, movable glass, that's always been a thing. So when he touched the TV and it didn't move, he thought it was broken.
Trying to swipe on the TV.
And his reality literally isn't the same as mine at that age.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to have some different expectations. I got to give him room to breathe in that. You know, just like I got to give my father some grace for the perspective he had.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. He said, I'm sorry.
That's just the way I see it, man. That's the way I see it.
And I'm right there with you. We can't expect these kids or just anybody else just to be privy to the information that we had when we were growing up is a totally different generation. And like you said, things are constantly evolving. Because my first phone, my first cell phone, that mug was just, I think I got it from Verizon, but it was shaped like a peanut. I can't remember.
Did it have the antenna that came in and out? That old Nokia. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Man, when I had my BlackBerry with the little keyboard on it, and it had the little thumb ball, little trackball, you couldn't tell me nothing, man. I got a BlackBerry, you couldn't tell me nothing. You wouldn't even be doing nothing. You used to be clicking it so people could see you click it. You couldn't tell me nothing on that. My BlackBerry, man. I want to have my beeper. What?
What?
I think I did it vibrate. It didn't do nothing. I just want people to see you reaching for it.
Yeah, right.
Come on, man.
Come on.
Shoot.
So
things change.
I know, right? So I know you got UOU back there, and what other kind of just reading material that you actually that you're reading right now, just to kind of improve your mindset and to help you as you grow.
So things that have been a big impact on me recently, obviously UOU, 9 to 5 Millionaire, those books are great. I recommend them. I said something about atomic habits,
right?
And just really shifting our understanding of the nature of habits and goals. One of the things I took from that book that was so powerful is that we talk a lot about goal setting. Mm-hmm. In that book, he talks about how goals aren't really the issue. He said the losing team had goals. The losing team actually had the same goal you did. Mm. It's not about the goals. It's about your habits and execution. Mm. And just really kind of leaning into that and being more process oriented,
mm-hmm.
you know, and not just, oh, I got a goal. And that's not to say you shouldn't have goals. I'm saying to simply have a goal, but no plan is faulty. That's faulty instructions. So things like that are good for me. A back in the day book that I always tell people go back and read Rich Dad Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki, old school.
I just saw him on Facebook a couple of days ago, man. He was going in.
That's a move the needle book, man.
Yeah.
I mean, that story about just the juxtaposition of his biological father versus his best friend's dad and the competing advice he was given from those two men,
mm-hmm.
who in their own space were both right.
Right.
But it wasn't about being right. Which one actually had the more effective, you know, view of things? And man, depending on your point of view and how you're raised and what you've been exposed to,
mm-hmm.
those could be two wildly different conversations, man. Yeah. And I read, man, just read, expose yourself to stuff, get around different people, watch a documentary on something you would normally watch. You gotta expand your mind, man. Mm-hmm. And the mind's like a rubber band. It was meant to be stretched.
Right.
When a rubber band is not stretched, it's absolutely useless.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely useless. And that's how I mind it. You have to grow and develop your mind. You have to get around different people. You know, there's this same feeling that I like getting around like-minded people.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't me. I needed to get around some people who didn't think like me.
Right.
I need some different thinking.
Some different
thinking. I need some people who didn't think like me so I could do better.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Shoot.
And I think that goes to, like, you know, how important association and accountability is.
Mm.
Just with King's Accountability Group, you got brothers in different minds. They think differently. They're in different places that can actually share. How important is that to you?
Man, that's been everything. And again, for those who are not familiar with the DISC assessment, and the DISC assessment, the D is that kind of driving personality. And when you look at the numbers, that's only about 12% of our population.
Mm-hmm.
If only 12% of the people are actually that driving, you know, just kind of go get it leader person, that leaves a whole bunch of other people who come up, you know, that other 88%.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't in that space. That's the biggest chunk of the population. And it's realizing that I'm over here in the I category. I'm just over here like, you can do it. You know, I'm a cheerleader.
Uh-huh.
Which again isn't necessarily celebrated in society. Get into that DISC assessment so you can know who you are and learn how to operate from that vantage point, and then how to leverage, because again, with DISC, we all have all four categories in this, right? We have the D, the I, the S, and the C. We all have them all. Mm-hmm. But for me, the I is the dominant one. I got to understand that. So now I got to learn how to tap into these other things so I can navigate in other spaces, situation. Right. It's just not my normal thing isn't be that driving D personality.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's not my nature. But there are times I need to recognize, because I'm more of a sit back and, you know, feelings guy.
Mm-hmm.
I need to lean into that because I need to get this particular thing accomplished. So just knowing yourself. And navigating those spaces, man, I think that's huge. I recommend that for any and everybody.
Right.
So having people around you
mm.
who are different profiles is another way. Like, I'm not going to suddenly become a D. I'm not one. But if I hang around some, I might pick up some things.
Right.
Or if I hang around some S's, I might pick up some things.
Mm-hmm. And I'm right there with you because I'm a high I and D also. And mm-hmm. as far as like that whole organization piece, man, you, hey, could somebody else do that, please? So I almost right. feel like I need an assistant, but it's just, hey, you just need to tap in and just learn to and grow in those areas, like you said. That's really important.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And even if only thing you're learning is that's not my strong suit, I do need to hire somebody to do that piece.
Yeah.
You know, find somebody who, man, their greatest dream is to sit and work on spreadsheets. If that's not your thing, why are you killing yourself doing something that's not your thing? Find somebody who will do it, you know, for pennies because they love doing it. And then,
right.
then y'all both win. They got something mm-hmm. to do and you don't have to do it. Like that's y'all right. both win. That's but again, do we really teach people to think that way? Mm. Or do we make people think you got to be all things?
Yeah.
And then we wonder why so many people are stressed out.
Mm-hmm. I remember hearing Dr. Miles Monroe say, what was it? Jack of all trades, master of none.
Right.
Yeah.
Where so at? Hold up. Because I don't want to do this wrong.
Uh-huh.
And yes, I am Googling during the podcast.
That's cool.
I just don't want to misquote it. Because I recently found out that that quote is incomplete. That's just the A part of the quote says uh-huh. a jack of all trades is a master of none. But there's a B part that people don't recite. The full quote is a jack of all trades is a master of none, but oftentimes better than a master of one.
What in the world?
That's the full quote. I just recently heard that. I'm going to read that again. A jack of all trades is a master of none, but oftentimes better than a master of one.
Mm.
That person who's just a master of one thing mm. is also a pigeonhole. There was a time when being a master of one was a good thing. In today's yeah. society, if you don't have multiple talents, like the multiple streams of income, why multiple right. streams of income? Because mm-hmm. you need the ability to pivot. Right. One of them streams might be down, so you need this other one to be up. Well, right. one of your talents might be hot today, but tomorrow it's not.
Right.
You know? And that's not to knock the guy that's the expert in a field. I'm mm-hmm. just saying there's definitely benefits to having a menu of talents.
Yeah.
That you're good at.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
And so, yeah, when I read that, man, it gave me a whole new perspective. But we used the A part of that quote uh-huh. to bash people over the head.
Right.
Oh, he a jack of all trades. That's what we've been using that quote to bash people over the head. Mm-hmm. And it's never been a complete quote to begin with.
Ain't that crazy?
Mm-hmm. I like to read, man. I like right. to read and research yeah. that.
You have to.
Yeah. Because we just repeat stuff we hear other people say.
Right.
Right. I'll give you another one. It's totally unrelated, but I'm going to use it to make a point. You ready?
Uh-huh.
How many of each animal did Noah take on the ark?
I was like, I almost feel like it's a trick question.
It is.
He took two of each.
That is incorrect, sir. If you go back and read the scripture,
uh-huh.
it clearly says, and I've looked at many translations,
yeah,
that he took, in many cases, seven pairs of the clean animals and four pairs of the unclean. Mm-hmm. Last time I checked, seven pairs would be seven times two. That's 14.
14.
Go read it. We say two by two because it's easy to explain to the children. But the children nursery rhyme version of the story is not what the book actually says. In case mm-hmm. he took 14. And then why the differentiation between the clean and the unclean? Because mm-hmm. they were only allowed to eat and sacrifice clean animals.
Right.
Animals that were deemed as being unclean. Pigs, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
They weren't allowed to eat or sacrifice those. So you needed more of the clean animals because if you're going to eat and sacrifice some, you still need some left to, you know, to populate the earth with.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I only tell that story as an example of something we've heard repeated over and over again. And most of us got it wrong because yeah. we never actually went and read it for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Now I have to go back and read Genesis. God,
please go back and read Genesis because it literally, and it, and I was just reading one day. Uh-huh. I wasn't studying nothing. I wasn't in a class. I was mm-hmm. just reading on my own. I was like, no, needle on the record. What?
What?
Read that again. Okay, and look at a couple different translations. So, and all I can think of, that's early in the Bible. That's Genesis.
Mm-hmm.
And all I kept thinking was, if I've been told that story incorrectly, how many others have I been told incorrectly?
Right.
And so what happened is people kind of sort of think they understand the scripture, and they'll use it against you because you don't know the scripture. Yeah. You don't know it well enough for yourself to defend it. And so you just kind of go with it because they sound really spiritual right now. So I don't want to question it.
Right.
No, learn to question that stuff. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying question the Bible. I'm saying question the person who's telling you their interpretation of the Bible if you haven't gone and read it for yourself.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And that's just an easy example I use. The whole Noah's Ark thing, because it's told us like to children.
Yeah.
And so we're telling the story wrong from the very beginning, and kids grow up believing it was only two.
Yeah.
And that's it. Because why? Think about how many times have you actually read the story?
Quite a few times, but not really like.
You missed it. Right. And you read it. Right. Uh-huh. You missed it. Go back.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I'll come back. If you read it and I'm wrong, I'll come back on here and say, hold on.
That is funny.
Yeah, man.
So now at this place, you know, I guess, you know, this phase of your life, and you're killing it. How would you define success?
The level of success I'm working to achieve is a level where I can fail epically and it's okay. Like if I fall, it's okay because I have the wherewithal and the resources. It's not a big deal. Most people are in a situation where they can't fail at all. They're living right at the margin. They're living right at the edge. You know, the average person, it's like a flat tire would be an emergency. Four flat tires would be devastating. They can handle one flat. They can't handle four flats.
Right.
You know, because they're living, you're living just on the edge. I can handle one little thing going wrong. And so for me, I want to get to the point where success looks like I can take bigger risks. I can take bigger leaps. Because I've built enough resources and have the wherewithal to withstand bigger storms, which means I'm asking God to put me in a position to handle bigger things, but I got to be positioned to do that.
Right. That's outstanding. Yeah, because people, yeah, I don't know what I would do if I had four flat, just call AAA, right?
Right. I mean, I'm going to pay for four tires.
Right.
You know, I mean, the $600-$700 it would probably take to just get some basic tires on your vehicle. There are a lot of families that would be.
Oh, that's a crisis. Mind. Right.
Your back's up. Like, well, I don't have 600. Just, you know, and that's just not living, man. That's like right. That's a lot of stress when you can't even put your hand on a grand.
Right.
Like, if you can't go to the bank right now and just put your hand on a grand. It's only $1,000. That should not be an issue. If you can't put your hand, if you can't go to the bank and withdraw $1,000 out your account, that's a problem.
That's a problem.
Because you got to think on just an everyday basis, $1,000 will take care of most of your just kind of run-of-the-mill everyday problems.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Which means you can't even handle a run-of-the-mill everyday problem. Mm-hmm. A big problem is going to absolutely take you down.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's crazy that the 120 conference, Dr. E.T., he actually said that. How he said it though is it was off the hook. He basically said if you live in paycheck to paycheck, in this day and age when there's so many resources available for you to make money, it's like you're an embarrassment to God. And when he said it, I was like, wow. I mean, because you just think about it, there's so many people. And it's not because they don't have money. It's just they're mismanaging the funds that they have. And so if you just feel like you need to kind of like what you hit on earlier, such and such has this, but do I need that? Or am I going to compare myself to this person because they got this car, or these type of clothes or shoes? Do I need that? Nah, you don't need that.
At all.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah, that's huge.
But we live in a society where we have an advertising machine that's just, you know, focus on convincing that whatever you got is crap. You need to come by this, and then you'll be cool once you got right. this.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's summing it up. Like mm-hmm. where you live ain't good enough. What you drive ain't good enough. What you, how you call your family, that ain't good enough. Like,
yeah.
And at some point, you have to decide not to keep drinking that Kool-Aid. Yeah. You have to decide that no, you know, and we get this, and again, biblically, people say, you know, we have to learn to be content.
Yeah.
Yes, but that doesn't mean we have to settle.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Don't be greedy. Don't be jealous and envious. But it doesn't mean you have to settle. That doesn't mean that you can't make provision for children in your family who haven't been born yet. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean you can't go after these things. You know, when you talked about Dr. Thomas, I hear him talking about being a billionaire. And if you just ended the conversation there, he said he wanted to be a billionaire.
Mm-hmm.
That could sound horrible.
Right.
But if you hear his whole conversation where he says, I want to be a billionaire so that people don't have to keep going outside of our community to find scholarships.
Mm-hmm.
He says it's great that Bill Gates gave scholarships, but it's embarrassing that Bill Gates has to come into our community and give scholarships because we can't give our own kids scholarships. That's a different conversation.
That is.
That's a different conversation. And people, and again, soundbite, we want to get the A part and don't catch mm-hmm. the B part.
Right. So, man, before we wrap up, mm-hmm. before we finish up, I definitely have to ask, like, do you have any parting words to anybody who's, you know, who might have gifts, talents, you know, ideas and dreams, but they just afraid to put that stuff into action? Can you share with the folks?
Definitely. Let's start with the title of this podcast, Why Not You?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that you're the one who's not meant to have, that's not meant to accomplish, right? That's not meant to do bigger things. Put it out there. Fear and self-doubt are killers. And the only way to really overcome them is just go out there and execute.
Mm.
Like, put it out there. Try it. Write it. Submit it. Upload it. Try it. If it don't work, do it again. Do it a different way. Revise it. You have to give yourself the space, the grace, and the patience to grow through the stumbles. John C. Maxwell has a book called Talent is Never Enough, right?
Right.
And talent is good, but you have to lean into that next stage. I was talking to some folks about this earlier. Like, talent will get you the job, but talent won't necessarily keep you the job, right? You might be qualified to get the job, but are you then qualified to keep the job? And even more important than that, are you qualified to then exit that job on your own terms when the time comes? It's an evolution. It's a continuum. Mm. And like, what are you doing to kind of operate that, you know, in that space?
There you have it, people. operate in that space that you're given and make it happen. Don't settle.
Yes, sir.
Don't settle. Man, I appreciate your time, D.C. Moore. This was great.
I appreciate you, D.
This
Wells.
This is great, boy. We definitely got to do it again.
Hey, for sure. For sure, man.
Hey, thank you for joining me on this episode of Why Not You with Derek C. Moore. Phenomenal man, phenomenal conversation. And he was dropping a ton of information and knowledge. I hope you guys took some copious notes. And next week, I'll be joined by a good friend of mine, Jennifer Griggs, who's an educator as well, down in Southern California at Ukiah High School. Oh man, she is killing it. Coaching basketball, teaching English, overseeing a debate team. These kids are winning championships in her debate team, y'all. So you got to give it up to her. Hey, it's Thanksgiving weekend. So you guys enjoy the family, love on one another, eat plenty of food, but stay healthy. Work it out somehow.